Hi, this is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station with me, your presenter, Dee Blick. Thank you for joining me. It's lovely to have your company today. Now, in the studio today, I have a woman who is a genuine trailblazer in her sector. She's a multi-award-winning mortgage advisor and the founder of Women in Mortgages UK, a private support group that she set up so that other women in her sector could feel nurtured and inspired. How amazing is that? When she's not collecting an award, motivating her team, or indeed pitching in and holding the fort, you're likely to find her on an expert panel or speaking at an event. I am delighted to welcome you, Kate Fuller, to the show today.
Hi, Dee. Thank you. That was really lovely. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
It's lovely because actually you interviewed me a couple of weeks ago, and it's just lovely that I'm turning the tables on you now.
You get to do it the other way around.
Yeah, it's great. And I just wanted to really start. We'll look at your career, and then I definitely want to talk about Women in Mortgages UK and how you balance being a leader and also being an employer, because they're all questions that I am fascinated to listen to your answers. But what first inspired you to get into the mortgage industry?
To be honest, I fell into it, which is how most of us fall into the mortgages. So I started in estate agency, being an estate agent, yeah. And I found that quite tough because people don't really trust you very much. And I found that quite difficult. So the company I worked for had a position come available to be a trainee mortgage advisor, and I absolutely just jumped at the chance because it just felt like a career where I could help people, people would trust me, and it just felt like something that really felt like it would resonate really well. And that was 21 years ago, and wow. I've not looked back.
Wow. I'm just thinking that I agree about estate agents, although there are some really great estate agents to local ones that are trying to change that perception. How did you feel? Because I know you're a really trustworthy person. You place a high value on authenticity. So how did it feel that suddenly you were not trusted despite being a trustworthy person?
Yeah, it's not a nice feeling at all. Like that automatic defensiveness barrier that people would have with you because they would automatically feel like you just weren't trustworthy from the persona that, you know, that estate agents have over the years. And like you said, there are some absolutely amazing, great estate agents out there. But the industry as a whole just doesn't have a great opinion held of it. So it was a really difficult thing to do. And I only stayed in it for about 18 months before I jumped out. I mean, obviously, I've worked very closely with estate agents since because that's part of the role with what I do with mortgages. But yeah, being on this side of it, there's much more of a trust built initially already. And well, people are open to trusting you. Whereas I found when you're an estate agent, people aren't even open to it very often.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard when you want people to like you.
Would drive me mad. And I just think it's amazing that when I look at what you've achieved in your career, that you went into it almost by escaping one career. You then went isn't that just fabulous that you built it into this glittering, shining orb of a career now where you're a genuine influence in your sphere. But tell me that you're going into being a mortgage advisor, was there a moment when you thought, you know what, I might have jumped from being an estate agent, but this really is the career for me? Did that happen? What was the, was there a eureka moment or a series of experiences?
I think it was just as I started to kind of grow into it, and when I started actually speaking with the clients, because there's some qualifications you have to do first, so it took a while to do that, and obviously I had to do a lot of like watching other people and things. When I actually started sitting down with the clients myself and having those conversations with those clients, and you know, getting to speak to them about what they're looking to do and how I could help them, I think that's when I kind of just went, I love this job. Yeah. And then, you know, having the first lot of people go through their transitions, you know, the first time I helped first time buyers buy their house, you know, and how amazing it is to be involved in that part of the transaction and just, you know, that stuff. And even now, like, I still love it. Like having the people that bought their first houses 20 years ago still come back to me now when they're, you know, they've now had their, they've got married, they had their kids, they've moved up to another home, and their kids are now leaving or going to university, and they're looking at their step out plan rather than their step in plan. And it's such a nice, lovely job to be involved with people's whole lives from start to, from, you know, that whole kind of really pivotal part of their lives. And actually the ones I've had recently, because I've been doing it so long now, I've had a few that are now not going to need their mortgage anymore. And that's actually really, I'm a bit sad that I won't get to see them. They won't come back and tell me their updates for their lives over the last few years since I last saw them anymore, because they won't need to come back.
I think as when I was listening to you there, talking about the moments that gave you sort of joy, there's also a big part I know from being a mortgage advisor, you really have to commit to exams. You can't just say, well, I'm building this career on my ability to build rapport and talk to customers. There's an underbelly of a real hard exams that you have to sit, aren't there?
Yeah, so there's a good exam process you have to go through, which takes most people 6 to 12 months to kind of work their way through, because it's all self-study. But it's it kind of gives you a foundation. But to be honest, most of the job is learned on it. Most, because it's not the kind of job where you learn the theory and then you can do the practical. Because actually being able to sit in front of a client and be articulate enough and confident enough to be able to advise them on what they should do with their biggest asset isn't something you can read in a book.
Yeah.
So it's learning, you know, how to do that and things like that. So, and you know, there's 100 different mortgage lenders out there, over 100 different mortgage lenders. So having to learn as much as you can about all of them is quite a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. And tell me, I think you alluded to this in your a few moments ago about the joy you get when you see a client and they come back for another mortgage, but also you lead a team now, and I want to know what part of your job and your role gives you the most personal satisfaction as a leader, but also as a woman who is still working with clients.
I think from a team perspective, I think seeing them grow and gain those clients that then become their clients, and helping them with their confidence and helping them with their knowledge is just, it's so rewarding. Because it got to the point in my career where I needed to grow to take on more advisors, or I was going to have to start turning people away because, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. And I decided to grow. And for me, that's just been so beneficial because it means I can help more people. Well, as a team, we can help more people. And I can, you know, my team help people in the same way I help people. So it's nice to see that same kind of, you know, caring, understanding, kind way of advising clients spreading out through the rest of my team as well.
That's a bit of a big transition, isn't it? That you go from being just you, you're learning, you're taking exams, and suddenly you're thinking, wow, for me to grow this business now, I need to take people on. And that is quite a big leap. And how did you manage that real massive change? Suddenly it's Kate, and then suddenly there are other people around the table, there are mouths that you need to make sure they are fed, that they are trained. How did you make that
leap? It's a scary jump, and it is just a lot of planning, but also a bit of hope in there as well, because you can plan and plan and plan. You know, we opened our shop, so I opened my business and recruited in 2018. Little did I know, and I could never have planned for, 2 years later having to send everybody home because we went into lockdown. Yeah. So, you know, so it's not like you could ever plan for stuff like that. So you do have to just kind of take a little bit of a jump and faith and just hope for the best and plan a bit, but also kind of just know that you've got a good foundation of what you want to build. So as long as you can kind of build the momentum off the back of that, and then just a bit of pivoting as you go along.
I think as well, something that I always ask my guests that are on here is, when you've got people that you're working with, what sort of a leader are you? If you had to sort of describe yourself on a CV, you've got a few lines, what would you say?
I definitely lead from the front. So I am in the trenches a lot with my team. And I think that kind of showing how to do it and actually doing so they can see and respect that I'm not just telling them what to do. I am doing it and they're emulating. So it feels more, for me, that feels more kind of, you know, receptive to getting loyalty and trust, because it's not just shouting direction at people. It's actually actively showing them and coaching them and supporting them. You know, we do a lot of refresher training, a lot of collaborative working, a lot of problem solving together, because for me, that's more important, actually being there for the team and giving them the space to tell me what they need and then giving them what they need. And the way I manage my team is different depending on who I'm managing, because they all need to be managed in a slightly different way. So it's time consuming and it can be, and sometimes I don't always get it right, because it's hard to sometimes judge things in the right way. But, you know, I think also being honest about those times is really important when it's a leader as well. You know, when you make a mistake, which you will, own it but build off it and work from it. I think is the important things. Yeah.
That's great. And I love it when leaders tell me that it's okay to make a mistake. And I really like it when owning up to your mistake. And even though I don't employ people, I work with clients. And if I've got something wrong, I will be the first to put my hand up and say, you know what, I don't think I really phrased that correctly, or having reflected on it, I think we need to take a different direction. And there's something quite sort of worthy about being able to say I got it wrong, rather than lying awake at night thinking, oh my goodness me, how am I going to cover this up? So, right, don't go away. We're coming up to the first break. And after the break, I'm going to be chatting to Kate about the people that have shaped her career, the challenges that she faces. And I also want to find out more about Women in Mortgages UK, how she went out and built a network of what is now 2,000 women.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee, and I've got the lovely Kate Fuller in the studio today. So, Kate, let's talk about the person, or indeed the people, that have shaped your career journey, both past and present. Who are they that you'd like to sort of make, you know?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, my mum always worked full time. She was the main breadwinner in our house pretty much my whole childhood. And I feel like, you know, that was in the early 80s. And I think it just kind of showed me that I just never thought that nothing was impossible for me, because she just showed me that you could be a business owner and a leader, and, you know, you could do this stuff. And it didn't matter that I was a woman. And I feel like that set such a really great foundation for me, just knowing, just thinking I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I think sometimes when you think it, it's a lot easier to do it, because there's no fear holding you back. So it's, I think she definitely set an amazing example for me with that. And I think the first woman I worked for the first person I worked for in mortgages was a woman as well, which back in the time at that time was really unusual. Because when I started 21 years ago, there weren't a huge amount of women working in mortgage advice. So for me to end up working for a woman, I think really helped with that as well. So I think, you know, the both of them, I just kind of always had these amazing female role models running these businesses and being successful. So I had no fear of being able to do it myself.
You know what I find so, I really love that answer. I've now asked, I think, three entrepreneurs on my show, and they've always cited a parent or a relative. I think Richie from Pets, Homes and Gardens, who is his granddad. I interviewed Kat, who was saying this morning that it was her dad. And I interviewed Nikki Butlin, who said her dad had inspired her. And you say your mum, and I think my mum had quite a big influence on me, because we came from a really quite a poor working class family where money was very much short on the table. And she always encouraged me, wanted me to go to university. And my Auntie Mary, who I talk about, she was like, I always say she was a port in the storm when I was a struggling wayfarer and going through all manner of problems with alcohol addiction, and she was always there for me. And there's something really warm and lovely when I hear an entrepreneur cite a family member over, say, a motivational speaker. Yeah. There's nothing wrong on the headlines or on, you know, on the TV, but there's something pretty special. And you obviously are in an industry that was at the time dominated by men. And so did you feel that you were breaking into that industry, or did you feel you just went into it quite seamlessly?
I didn't really think about it at the time because, you know, I had these great female role models that I didn't really think about that it was the male dominated industry. It's only once I got into it and then started going to more events that you then realize you're only one of a few women in the room. And I think that it's great that it's not like that anymore. There is a lot more women working in it. It's still problematic at times, but it's a lot better than it was. But I don't think I really thought about it much, to be honest, having those role models. And like you said, like my mum, we lived in a council house. You know, there wasn't money. There's no family money or anything like that. So all she was completely self-made as well from, you know, just doing GCSEs or O-levels at the time and then building her career from just working hard. And I think that that kind of just was instilled in me, the work ethic of, you know, you can work hard, you can do well, you can be successful.
I really like that. I think there's nothing like having sometimes a tough upbringing where money is not in big supply to make you actually want to better yourself. And certainly I fell into that. And so I want to talk a bit now about how you run your business, because every time I look at you on LinkedIn, you're at an awards ceremony, you're chairing an expert panel, you're winning an award, you're presenting an award. But obviously you've got the hard yards of running a daily business. So tell me, how do you manage running your business and managing and motivating your team? I just wondered, what are the everyday challenges that you face, as well as managing this growing media profile, which is very evident when anybody looks at what you're up to?
I think it's a real juggle, if I'm honest, and I probably work too many hours. I think my average working week is about 60 hours a week. So, you know, I'm working a lot, but I love the job and I'm really passionate about it. And I think that's why sometimes, you know, going to these events and sitting on panels or motivating my team doesn't always feel like work to me, Dee. Like it's like a passion project. So it feels, you know, people always say to me, you need to look after yourself, you need to make sure you're taking time. And I'm like, but if you love what you do, it doesn't feel like work. So it doesn't always feel like work to me. Don't get me wrong, there are days when it's tougher. With the team, we have daily check-ins. Every morning we have a half hour catch up with the whole team to check in and see how we're all doing. Does anyone need anything? Is there anything that we want? You know, I'm constantly available on WhatsApp if they need stuff during the day, if I don't happen to be in the office. And they know that they can approach me whenever they need to. And I think that has really helped kind of just build the trust and the support mechanism, you know, foundations within the business. And then I have a great team around me. I have an executive assistant who has been with me for 15 years. So he's been with me from the very start of it just being me and him all the way through this journey. So I think, you know, he's a great support to me and the rest of the team. So I think, you know, surrounding yourself with those people really helps. You know, I've got a business partner as well who does all the operation stuff so that I don't have to worry about it. And she's fantastic with that side. So I think it's not about being able to do it all yourself when you're a business owner. It's about putting in the right support in the places that can help you then do the bits that you're really good at. And it's about picking your strengths. And, you know, I am rubbish when it comes to an Excel spreadsheet. They're not my bag at all. But my business partner loves them. Absolutely fantastic at them, but she doesn't like really going out networking. So, you know, it's about picking the balances, isn't it, of who's good at what. And I think that's what's important when you're running a business and you're trying to do a lot.
I really like that. And I think you touched at the beginning of that about looking after yourself. And we've got a couple of minutes to the next break. And I just want to talk about, I noticed on a post recently when you were talking about your business and some of the wonderful things that you've accomplished, you also mentioned in there that you are 12 months sober from alcohol. Yeah. I'm particularly keen interest in that. I mean, I'm a clean and sober. Tell me more about this.
Yeah, so I think I didn't have a particularly healthy relationship with alcohol, and I needed to give it up, really. And I think I made the decision just over 12 months ago, and it's been the absolute best thing I've ever done. And I think that the more and more I came away from drinking, the more and more space and capacity and clarity you have in the rest of your life, you know, and the more energy you have. And, you know, just I found not having to think about last night would be a heavy night. The freedom of the next day, not having to be impacted at all by the day before, it was just so freeing. And, you know, and I think that really has helped me kind of push my business and myself just that extra step further, not having alcohol in the picture at all.
I think that's
made such a difference.
Absolutely brilliant. And I know for me that apart from the fact it got my husband off my back and other relatives looking at me going, what are you doing? And I was studiously and ignoring them. But once I gave up, the thing that being clean and sober, it gives you that absolute clarity that suddenly you're much better at making decisions. Yeah. And I really, really get it when you talk about the next day, the amount of times I would be thinking, you know what, I'm going on a heavy night tonight, so I'm going to have to manage the morning. And you can wake up as fresh as a daisy. And I don't know if you're like this, but I was never a nip curtains drinker. I liked to be really loud, and I called it gregarious, but I think it was obnoxious. But yeah. I wake up the next morning, head in hands, and I'd be thinking, who did I offend last night? And I'd be racking my brains, hoping that I didn't say anything to anybody or do anything. And not having that on its own is just a great gift, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I know we've spoken about it before. I was the same. The drinking was outside and vivid and in people's faces. And yeah, not having that what they call beer fear. It's just an amazing feeling, isn't it? Not having to worry, have that anxiety about what did you say or who did you speak to the night before is just so freeing. And it just gives you space in your head to concentrate on the stuff that is important and not have to worry about that stuff that really you didn't have done anyway. So it's like having capacity in your life and your space for what else you actually want to do and what want to improve in your life and your business and your personal life. Yeah. Taking the drinking out just gives you that ability.
Doesn't it just? So don't go away, because we're coming up to the next break. And after the break, I'm going to be asking Kate how on earth she managed to really found this amazing group of 2,000 women now, how she's done that, as well as having a full-time business and being at award ceremonies and all the rest of it.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee, and I'm with the lovely Kate Fuller. So, Kate, we were just speaking about you giving up alcohol, which I think is amazing, and I'm with you 100% of the way. I think the fact that you can focus on your business with this absolute clear mind, you can make better decisions. It's just a great thing to do. And can we just talk a bit now about Women in Mortgages UK? Because that was no mean feat. That tell me a bit about it and why you established it and where you are now.
Yeah, so I am obviously the industry is still quite male dominated as a whole, particularly as you go up levels, as you know, lots of industries are. And I went to an event and I just had not a great experience with all the men in the room, to be honest. They were quite old school and it was just not the best environment. And I walked away thinking, wow, that's not what my business is like. And I wonder if there's other women out there that are having to deal with that, if they're working in these businesses like that. And I thought, I wonder if there's a space for women to really, you know, in the industry. There was already one that existed in a state agency that I was already aware of. So I looked for one in the mortgage industry and it didn't exist. So I thought, well, I'll create it. So that was 2 and a bit years ago. And now, yeah, there's over 2,000 women sitting in this community. And it has been the most amazing thing. And the feedback I get from, you know, it's such a kind, supportive, you know, place where everyone just feels like they can ask what they want to ask, talk about what they want to talk about, and there's no judgment. And I think, you know, sometimes, particularly as women, we need that little bit of separation space. And the industry can be, some of the industry can be a little bit, it's still sales, right? So there can be a little bit of arrogance in some of the industry at times. So I think having a space where that kind of is stripped out and we're all there just to help and support each other, whether that's about mortgages or whether it's about something else. You know, there's often quite a lot of talk around how people are coping, the stress levels, menopause, perimenopause, you know, all those kind of things, juggling family life as well, which I think having a space that's just for women gives people an opportunity to kind of talk about those things that they might not feel comfortable talking about in other spaces.
And that's incredible. And tell me, with a network of that size, have you got plans for, say, an in-person, you're at the moment, you're all chatting online, do you have plans for an in-person conference? I would have thought with what you do on the sidelines of your business, that would almost be a no-brainer.
Yeah. Definitely on the radar, yeah. So it is coming. It's in the, I've got a real framework of what it's going to look like. And I am really excited about it, actually. Yeah, so I think it'll be great to have a space for women in the room. Yeah, I think it'll be quite magical. So
do you have to invest a lot of your time? And is it just a matter of do you go on there each day and see what discussions are brewing?
Yeah, so it was more time at the start, because obviously I'm, you know, the more posts and the more people say talking, the more it encourages other people to talk. So I spent a lot of time posting myself. So it felt a little bit like a blog at the very beginning to a degree. But now there's so many people, there's a lot of posts and a lot of other people are asking and answering. So I don't have to do a lot of it as well. But I do go on every day and check all the posts have been answered and there isn't anyone that's not had an answer, or, you know, there isn't anything that's slightly shouldn't really be posted, or, you know, spam occasionally, that kind of stuff. So I'm still monitoring in that way, but it doesn't take up too much of my time, if I'm honest. But it's such a nice space to be in that it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And I think I want to now bring you back into your day job. So we've learned all about your philosophy as a leader, Women in Mortgages UK, and also what gives you the most satisfaction. What I'd love to know is, how do you balance the emotional side of helping people with the financial side of the job?
Yeah, it's really tough. So I think, you know, we really want to help every single person we speak to. And there are occasions where we can't really help. And that's a really tough thing to deal with. And it does hit a lot, you know, a lot of us really hard at times. But I think that it is just about balancing that kindness with clients as well as ourselves. And, you know, we do a lot of planning, even if it's, we can't help someone now, so there's no monetary anything in it for us at the moment, but hopefully we can help someone in 6, 12, 18 months down the line, and then we can help them, and then that we get paid. So it's just about, you know, balancing that, building business for the future, not just today sometimes. And sometimes that's all people need, just a bit of guidance. And then, you know, they come back or they recommend us, and we still make money that way. But it's, it's hard sometimes to balance that, because the empathy that you feel with some people's situations can sometimes really hit quite hard, because, you know, we get people that are often quite upset when they speak to us, and, you know, so that can hit you sometimes. So but I love helping those people. That's one of the best bits of the job, helping people that don't think they can be helped.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And how do you get your clients through referrals from estate agents, mortgage conveyances? I mean, who actually gives you the work?
It's a bit of everything, to be honest. So we get them from estate agents. We've got some accountants. A lot come to us directly. A lot come back to us because they've used us before. A lot of recommendations. Some find us on the internet. So it's a bit all over the place. But it's always nice when they've been recommended. Because they've been told how good we are already. Because otherwise it's hard to convince people that you're really good if they don't know, they've never dealt with you. So.
I always think when I go into an estate agent's and if I see the thank you cards on the wall, you think that's a really lovely sort of validation. Do you get thank you cards and letters?
Yeah, we do. I got a really nice one at the weekend, actually. A lady came in to see me who's going for a divorce. And she came in with a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates and a card to just to say thank you for all my help and support over the last few months in particular. And it was really, really nice and unexpected. But it just reminded me that I really like helping people when they're in that period of time where they really need someone to be on their side. And to sometimes help them get out of situations that just aren't that great. And it's really rewarding to be able to help people and just be even just a listening ear at times for them in those situations, you know, especially when we have clients go through it quite a lot. So we can kind of emphasize and, you know, and explain, you know, kind of say, look, it is normal, but don't worry, you're going to get there kind of, you know, conversation sometimes.
Absolutely, because it's such a fraught process that if you can give them hope and reassurance, you've ticked a massive box. And so I now want to take you into the glitz and glam. We've spoken about being in the business. So I want you to share some pinch me moments from recent months. So we're not in the business now. This is you on your very, you've got this very public facing persona. Share some pinch me moments.
So I think winning Mortgage Advisor of the Year twice at two different awards last year was definitely pinch me moments. I think, you know, being shortlisted at all is always an honour, but actually winning is just an incredible feeling when there's so many fantastic advisors out there. So to, you know, to be honoured enough to win is just, yeah, they were definitely pinch me moments. And, you know, you have to go up on stage and collect your award and have photos, and it all just ends up being an absolute blur of, 10 minutes of time. And I think that for me is, and, you know, bringing the trophies back to the office with the team and all of that kind of stuff and celebrating with the team is always a pinch me moment, I think. Yeah. And then being asked to do things like this, Dee, you know, being asked to come on to this and then do things like with panels and discussions and talks and stuff, all of that to me just feels pinch me moments, to be honest.
Does it feel, I mean, I've never lost the feeling of feeling slightly surreal when somebody asks me to do something and I'm looking over my shoulder thinking, have you got the right person? But recently you were on an expert panel, weren't you? It was quite a big thing.
I did one a few weeks ago for an event talking similar about stuff like this. And yeah, I wasn't expected to be on that. So, and I think, yeah, there's another one that's potentially coming up that I think will be really exciting, but I can't talk about it yet. That one's going to be really, really exciting.
I'm always interested when you're asked to do these things. Do you ever have that? I talk about this a lot, imposter syndrome, or do you just think, yep, absolutely, I'm in?
No, 100%. Yeah, you do definitely have the imposter syndrome. I think it's when you do something that you absolutely love. I think it's just you just feel like it's taken for granted how well you don't really recognize how well you do it because you love it so much. And I think so sometimes when people say, oh, you're doing amazing things, you think, well, am I? Because I feel like I'm just doing something that I really enjoy. So it just feels a little bit, definitely feels surreal. And the imposter syndrome definitely kicks in at times when I get asked to do some things. Yeah.
I get that. I think when I wrote You're the Best, I've got a line in there that we downgrade our experience and expertise as mere common sense because we just think, well, this is what I do. It's like brushing my teeth. I do this day in, day out. And it almost becomes so top of mind. We can just chat about it without even having to engage our brains. It's just there all the time. That we've got to be careful that we don't downgrade it as common sense because it's not, is it? To the people that we're talking to
no.
We're on, it's anything but common sense. And so I'm going to look forward to seeing your next announcement on social media as to what this exciting project is that you can't share right now. I just want to ask you now, you spoke about your mum being a real person that's shaped your career with her outlook and her encouragement, and also by setting this incredible example for you. I just wondered that is there an inspiring quote or a motivational person that said something and you think, I'm absolutely all over this. Do you have an inspiring quote?
Yeah. So actually it was fairly recently actually that I came across it, but it really did resonate with me. And it was measure your success based on how much fun you're having.
Oh.
And I thought, and that was Gabby Bernstein. And I thought it really resonated with me, because I think it's so easy when you work in business, particularly, to just get sucked into figures. You know, how much have we done? How much money are we making? How many people are we helping? You know, all those kind of high level figure stuff. You know, are we having record breaking months and things like that? And it's so easy to then be a little bit, you know, down if you're not quite where you thought you were going to be on stuff like that. But actually reframing it in the, am I having fun though? Like, that's just felt like such a nice reframe for me. And I think it really helps with like the balance of work life as well. You know, because if I work a lot, but am I still having fun when I'm not at work, or when I'm at work, but when I'm outside of work, is it allow me to have fun? Because then it's still success.
Some of the quotes that my guests share, I've never heard that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. Measure your success by how much fun you are having. That's going to be on my list.
I love it. I just think it's so powerful for me.
Isn't it just? So it's time to turn the tables on me, Kate. I'm at that stage in the show where you ask me a question and I truly don't have a clue what the question is going to be. So what's your question for me today?
So I'm sure you've been asked it before, but I would really like to know, before you wrote your first book, what inspired you to actually even write a book?
Wow, that's right. So what inspired me? I think there were two things, actually. One was a client. I was writing for a client that I'm still writing for now. And I won all these awards for my writing in magazines. I got the highest responses for my articles. They were all like reader links, so you could measure how many people responded. And he said to me, you should write a book, Dee. And my first thought was never, nobody will buy it. You know, all the usual negative chatterbox decided it would introduce itself. And the other thing, which is a bit more deep and meaningful, is my sobriety, that I was clean and sober from alcohol addiction. My head had really cleared. And I began to think, well, why not? Why shouldn't I write a book? I didn't get clean and sober to play it safe. And they were the two things that it was a positive collision that set me off on that track that I wrote my first book. It sold about 5,000 copies. And then I almost was on that frame of thinking and believing that I could write other books as well. But the first book, which is the hardest book, because you're bearing your soul to the world, you don't know how people are going to react. Are you going to get slated with one-star reviews? And believe you me, I did get slated with some one-star reviews that really crush your soul and your ego. But yeah, they were the two things. And I know that I would never have written a single book if I hadn't got clean and sober. I wouldn't have had the clarity of mind. I wouldn't have had the presence to even think that I was worthy of writing a book. So that is a lovely question. Did you expect that answer?
No, I didn't. No, I honestly didn't know what you were going to say. So it's nice to hear, because I think it's true, isn't it? Sometimes it's just a collision of things coming together at the right time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I'm a great believer that when you get, in my case, clean and sober, so many things open up to you that I would have been blinded to, because when I was drinking heavily, I was so closed off from the world that things could have been waved right in front of my face and I wouldn't have seen them. And so getting that presence of mind meant that I suddenly opened my whole self up to this creative sphere of thinking, well, why not? Kate, it's been absolutely lovely having you on the show today. I think
it's been
you're
a pleasure.
Inspiration. You're an absolute inspiration to me and to thousands of other women as well. So thank you for joining me, and I'll look forward to catching up with you soon and sharing your latest lot of great news. But thank you.
Thank you, Dee. Thank you.
Right, now I want to turn the attention on to you, my lovely listeners, with today's final thoughts. And this was inspired really by Kate, because it's all about finding your tribes. So are you building your community of people that are going to nurture, support and inspire you? Perhaps you've drifted away from them, or you need to revive your network. I think it's amazing what a little online call or an in-person meeting can do to bring your support network back to life. Don't go it alone. I think not only is it more fun to share the highs and seek support for the lows, but when you join these networks, it's just amazing that you can share ideas. You can collaborate on projects with people that complement your skills and your expertise. I know from experience and from speaking to so many, many other entrepreneurs that building a network or belonging to one can just give you that shot of confidence that you need. It can really show you that you really are on the right track, but that if you do veer off and you have a crisis of confidence or you need a few people to support you, that support is always to hand. But ultimately, it's about really looking after yourself so that you don't feel alone. Until next week, this is me, Dee Blick, signing off from Lead Well, Live Well. Remember to look after yourself, be kind to yourself, and please get in touch with me and let me know what you think about my lovely guests and Lead Well, Live Well itself. Thank you. You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.